Last Word on Today FM.
Delighted that we're joined for the Culture Club today by Roisin Murphy, who is taking part in Incognito 2025, the art sale where the artists behind the artworks are kept absolutely secret until after the event. Half of the collection is going to feature in the Incognito Gallery in Charlemagne Square in Dublin too. Will be on sale on Friday and Saturday, April 11th and 12th. So that's Friday and Saturday week. While the other half will be available online on Wednesday, April 16th. It's all in aid of the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation. Each postcard-sized artwork costs €70 and can be viewed at incognito.ie. So will you pick out Roisin Murphy's effort? Roisin, it's great to have you on the Culture Club. Thank you very much for being with us. We know you for your music, but we also know you for your visual style. How much of that comes across in what you've drawn or painted for the Incognito Gallery?
Oh, a fair bit, yes. I actually really enjoyed making the artwork. A moment for me. I spent a couple of afternoons putting them together, and it was a bit like going back in time, because I very much thought I was going to be a visual artist when I was a kid growing up. I was constantly making pictures and building things, and, you know, I'd maybe do something like interior design one minute or photography the next, or that's what I thought I was going to do, something visual, painting. Obviously, fine art. Yeah, so it was a nice couple of afternoons for me. I really enjoyed it.
So you didn't just throw this down on a postcard. You took effort at this.
I did. I put a fair bit of effort into it. I wanted to impress my children.
But in fairness, during your career, I mean, the visual aspect of your performances has been important as well, hasn't it? And you do pay a lot of attention as to the type of clothes you wear.
Yeah, not just that. You know, I actually create visually everything that you see around the record. So I make the artwork for the sleeves. You know, I creatively direct that, and I direct the videos. And of course, I do my own styling. And it's quite complex job, actually, the clothes for the shows anyway, because I kind of change something on almost every song. So yeah, it's something I've always loved, and to kind of have a job that is about music is the best thing in the world, I think, 100%, because everybody responds to music, and music makes everything better. So any image, really, if you've got good music at the back of it, the image is kind of irrelevant. You know, you can put any image to good music.
Yeah, but you put a lot of thought into it, though.
Music's the seed, but then, yeah, I take as much, you know, as much freedom as possible to just create visuals to go alongside the music, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I read somewhere recently a suggestion that Lady Gaga wouldn't have made it if you hadn't blazed the trail for her first.
I'm sure she would have made it. She looks like the type of one that would have made it no matter what.
But you probably were a trailblazer in that regard, though, in making the whole performance bigger than just the music.
Yeah, I think when I started in the 90s, it was a bit weird, like, to be very visual. It was seen like you had to be very serious. You had to be very authentic. And I never really enjoyed that. I thought that was very limiting. So one thing, you couldn't be too visual. Another thing, you couldn't be funny. They wouldn't really want humor. So I sort of threw both those things into the work, kind of as a reaction to what was going on at that time. But of course, people like David Bowie would be a huge influence on me, and Grace Jones. So from the sort of generation before that, there was plenty of very visual artists in music. But yeah, when I came into it, it was a little bit dry that way, you know.
Well, you changed a lot of that. Let's get to your Culture Club choices. And I'm fascinated by your first choice. Now, was the first single you ever bought, was it still when you were at home in Arklow, or had you moved to Manchester at this stage?
Oh, I was in Arklow. Yeah. I have to say, there's more to it than it being the first single I ever bought. It actually was taken out of my grandmother's jukebox in her cafe, her fish and chip shop cafe that she had here in Arklow, because I'm in Arklow at the moment. but that she had this big fish and chip place called Bumtaz at the top of the town there, and they had a jukebox in it. And when they were finished with the 7 inches in the jukebox, they'd give them to me. So this was the first one I got.
Wow, this is Blondie, The Tide Is High. Blondie, The Tide Is High. Roisin, I think by the time that came out, Blondie had already been a star for a number of years, actually more of an icon for many people. What did she mean to you?
A lot. My brother Sean was a huge fan, and he had the records, and he had a massive picture of her over his bed, and she was wearing a T-shirt that said Andy Warhol on it, and she was at the height of her beauty, and I think it was a big influence on me, you know, even kind of subconsciously, because I was too young to be a big fan at that time. But that image is a thing that really stuck with me. That kind of punky, irreverent beauty.
Yeah, from albums like Parallel Lines back in that day. And did you get many more tracks out of that jukebox over the years? Did you start your record collection that way?
I did. I've got a few bits, but there was a few grandchildren, so it sort of went around us, you know. But so I didn't get every one that they got out of there. But I got a Madonna one out of there, and I don't know what else. But yeah, I got a few bits out of it.
So you got into pop music quite early, so did you?
Pop music was everywhere when I was growing up. I mean, Madonna was a big thing when I was growing up. I remember walking around town with a gang of girls, and we'd all be singing Like a Virgin, you know, which was ironic because we all were virgins. You know, but we'd all sing it, and we'd sit up in a tree singing pop songs. People wouldn't know where the singing was coming from. And so, yeah, it was a big thing when I was growing up.
I have to say, though, I'm surprised by the choice you gave us for favourite album, because lots of people in the Culture Club over the years have given us Van Morrison albums. You've picked Feed on Fleece, but I wouldn't have thought of you going for Van Morrison as a favourite album.
Well, I mean, it's very, very hard for me to pick a favourite album, because, I mean, my life's been obsessed with music and with albums and so on. So it's a kind of a misnomer to pick a favourite album, but there's several threads through that record that mean an awful lot to me. You know, there obviously is this kind of Celtic blue-eyed soul to Van Morrison that I would aspire to, for sure. And I love him as an artist, love him as an artist. But this particular album, there's elements to it. It's quite a big production in places. There's almost an orchestration about the way it's arranged and so on. But it has all these threads, this soul music, blues, Irish kind of Celtic feeling in it. And it's sort of all the things that really make up me, really at the very bottom of what my musical DNA is. And then there's a song on there called The Streets of Arklow, which just happens to be my hometown, and it just happens to be one of his best songs ever, you know. So it's very special to me, that record. And I always loved his early music. And I had a couple of his earlier albums like Moondance and Astral Weeks when I was quite young, you know, started buying records when I was 15 or 16. But I didn't really find this one until I was in my late 20s or early 30s, because it's not quite as famous a record. I found it because it had the Streets of Arklow on it. And it's a jewel of a record. It's sort of endlessly entertaining, and every new song is a new sort of aspect of the jewel, if you like. And it's very, very special record. It's very beautiful. And it's very hard to pinpoint what it is, you know, because it has such a kind of odd mix of influences. And I love it when he's like that, when he makes something that's just a unique blend of influences.
Let's hear a little bit of the Streets of Arklow, or Streets of Arklow. Van Morrison's Streets of Arklow from Veedon Fleece. What age were you, Roisin, when you moved from Arklow to Manchester? And were you homesick for Arklow?
I was 12 when we all moved as a family to Manchester. I took it on the cheek, really, on the chin, as they say. I took it on the chin. I was up for a new adventure. I think even by then I was ready to try something new, you know. My brother was a bit older. I think he might have found it a bit harder because he had more, you know, his friendship group was really more solid when you get a bit older and everything. But for me, it was a refreshing new start, honestly.
And did it open up the doors for you for your later career, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's very hard to know what difference it would have made to stay here. I'm sure I would have done something creative. I found myself in the creative industries anyway. But I definitely went to Manchester at a great time. It was I was there throughout the late 80s and the early 90s. Musically, this was pumping Manchester. It was everything. There was the Hacienda, there was all the dance music explosion, and then there was like the Happy Mondays and the Stone Roses, that sort of what later was called Madchester, you know. And so it had a great musical, well, there was an explosion of musical culture around that time in Manchester, and it felt like the centre of the world for a while.
Your favourite band or artist? You've gone for rhythm and sound. Tell us why this choice.
I can just listen to it and it makes me feel better. It's a very hard thing to say any more about it. It's maybe it's because I actually believe it might be the greatest studio recordings of all time. Some of these songs and tracks that they made took several months, if not years, to do technically, and they were done with a fine tooth comb, the mixes, and I love reggae and I love dub especially, and it's literally can kind of cure a hangover or a headache or a flu, or a, you know, it's medicine music for me. So if I'm anyway feeling down, I put rhythm and sound on.
Okay, the track we have is See Maya. Simia. Now, the best gig you were at, before you give us your choice, what is it that you look for in a gig? And do you get to many gigs, given that you're performing so many yourself, Roisin?
I mean, I there's always plenty to see when you do festivals. I'm around a lot of live music, of course. And I love it. And I've been around it since I can ever remember. I can't remember my first live music experience because my uncle Jim Turl was big musician down here in Wicklow and in Arklow, and he had several bands. He had a couple of jazz bands, and I used to go and spend all day Sunday in a place called Gardner's, which is out of town actually, and he'd have all day sessions on Sundays in the summer, and I spent every weekend of every summer listening to his bands and dancing around as a little toddler, you know. So I've been around a lot of live music.
The choice you gave us is the Stooges reunion at Hammersmith Apollo. Tell us about this.
Well, it was amazing you didn't even have to consider the age, you know, of Iggy Pop. He was just like a bullet from a gun the minute he came out. To the minute he went back in again, it was just pure energy. And I've always loved the Stooges since I was a teenager. But I think I was in my mid-30s when I saw this gig. And it was just a miracle to see them all back together. And for them to have still such an edge. The energy around the gig was unbelievable. It was amazing. And the audience was amazing. We went from very old to very young. It was a privilege, just such a privilege to see.
We actually have a little clip from Iggy and the Stooges singing Raw Power at that reunion gig.
Yeah.
Okay, that is Iggy and the Stooges. Actually, your own gigs, Róisín, are you playing in Ireland this year at all?
I'm playing in the Glendalough. It's a festival called Beyond the Pale. So, amazing festival with all kinds of music, like a really massive, you know, from me to disco to all kinds of music, rock music. It's brilliant. It's a really good festival.
I think
I'm looking forward to seeing Boney M personally.
There'll be loads of people looking forward to seeing you. Can you just hold on a minute? I need to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back with the rest of the Culture Club with Róisín Murphy after this. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Róisín Murphy is with us and we've enjoyed all of our musical choices, but we want to get to our other cultural choices as well. And we asked for favourite actor, director, movie. The movie you gave us is called The Night of the Hunter with Robert Mitchum in it. Tell us about this.
My mother's got very good taste in movies and she's got very good taste in everything. She understands my music perfectly. She knows why I'm a bit strange and a bit weird and she accepts it and understands it totally. I mean, she's got really deep taste, you know, in things. British, always was a big reader as well. But we used to watch movies together Saturday and Sunday. And any day that I might have been off sick from school, we'd find the matinee, you know, that we'd watch all black and white movies. I could watch 2-3 black and white movies one after another. I often think I must have had a lot of attention span going back when I was a kid. But this was coming on the television and I remember her telling me, this can't be missed. This is a brilliant film. This is one of the best films I've ever seen. You've got to sit down and watch it. But it's absolutely scary as hell, you know, when I was watching it with her. Because there's Mila murders, as they say in it. And there's two little babbies. And I think the reason why she really responded to it was because her and her brothers and sisters had a rowing boat that they had on the river down here in Arklow when they were growing up. And they used to go off on their own boat when they were very young, just the three of them. And so she really relates to this because they go off on this rowing boat. They escape on this boat up a river. And anyway, it's just one of the most magical, beautiful black and white film. Very scary. Robert Mitchum is brilliant and frightening in it. And the scenery in it, the photography in it. It's directed by an actor called Lawton, very famous Shakespearean British actor. It's the only film he ever directed because he got terrible trouble for making this film. It wasn't a success and so on. But it's literally the most beautiful film ever made, I think.
We have personally. A short...
It's actually one of the easiest questions, you know, what's your favourite film?
Okay, I have a short
clip. This is definitely it.
Ah, little lad, you're staring at my fingers. Would you like me to tell you the little story of right hand, left hand? The story of good and evil? H-A-T-E. It was with this left hand that old brother Cain struck the blow that laid his brother low. L-O-V-E. You see, these fingers, dear hearts, these fingers has veins that run straight to the soul of man. The right hand, friends, the hand of love. Now watch and I'll show you the story of life. These fingers, dear hearts, is always a warring and a tugging, one against the other. Now watch them. Old brother left hand hates a fighting, and it looks like love's a goner. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hot dog loves a winning. Yes, sirree. It's love that won. And old left-hand hate is down for the count.
I never heard it better told.
So Robert Mitchum did more than westerns.
Oh, he was a great man. And you only ever hear good stories about him as well, that he was a really nice person, a good person and a real character. But they don't make him like they used to.
Your favourite actor, Isabelle Huppert, the French actor who I think is described as, and I'm taking this now, I have to admit, from Wikipedia, but they describe her as known for her portrayals of cold, austere women devoid of morality.
Yes, that's true.
You
just like
that.
Me.
That's true. What is it about
her? Very brave actor. Takes on these parts nobody else would even. Everybody, you'd be afraid to play the parts that she takes, you know. And then she just transforms a film with these performances. The most extreme version, I think, being a film called, it's called The Piano Teacher. Absolutely bizarre film with the most, she's got the most unbelievable character that you've never seen anything like it in a film. And then she ends up killing herself in front of everyone at the end. And it's the, one of the greatest scenes you've ever seen, I think. And she's, of course, she's French and very chic and she's everything, really. She's everything. She's amazing. Really a brilliant.
And you have Stanley Kubrick as your favourite director.
Yeah, because, I mean, who else, you know? I mean, just because I thought, Jesus, there's lots of directors I really, really love, but if there has to be a favourite, I mean, I suppose it's going to have to be Kubrick. I had just re-watched Barry Lyndon recently.
Which was made in Ireland, of course.
That was made in Ireland,
with
yeah.
With Ryan O'Neill, wasn't it?
Ryan O'Neill, yeah. Let Nonny was Irish. It's absolutely brilliant film. It's one of my favourites as well.
And then for a favourite play, you gave us Arthur Miller's The Crucible. Why have you selected that?
It's the best play I've seen. It's the best staging I've seen. I'd love to be able to tell you who directed it. I'd love to be able to tell you which I think it might have been the Vic, the old Vic in London that I saw it. I'm not sure. It's many, many years ago. But it's really stayed with me. There was a very minimal staging, production design, but brilliant, just worked perfectly, brilliant acting. And it's a perfect, compact play that has so much in it about the way humans are. And it stays relevant, you know. No matter what, you know, nowadays you can compare it to kind of cancel culture, I guess, when it was written, it was being compared to kind of how people were going after communists and, you know, the idea of the witch hunt. It's just a brilliant, compact play that's got everything that you need in a play.
Brings us nicely to favourite author, because I am fascinated by your choice of Philip Roth and two of his best books, Human Stain and American Pastoral, you've put down for us.
I picked up The Human Stain in the airport one time just because I thought, what's this, The Human Stain? And I read that. I was riveted. I mean, it was a real page turner, but got very intense. And then I read quite a few of his books. I think I read almost all of his books. And apparently I've just heard that there's a biography by some guy who's been cancelled. And I think they've tried to cancel Philip Roth as well for naughty behaviour. That,
in fairness, I think he wrote about that a lot in his books anyway.
Yes, he did. I mean, he was pretty open about it. A bit like my own father. So Mickey Murphy would have been well cancelled by now. But so apparently there's a I'd like to read this amazing biography of him that's out at the moment or has been out for a while. But I chose those because those came to my head. But recently I read Anna Karenina by Tolstoy, Leo Tolstoy, and I think that's my favourite book now of all time. And it just has everything. It's riveting. It's, you know, it's like a soap opera. It's it's a melodrama. It's everything. It's got everything. It's got absolutely everything. And it's so easy to read, even though it's so old.
Television shows. When I look at your choice from a child, I'm not surprised, really, when you think of your love of costumes, that you love for Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman was my thing growing up. Yeah, I mean, I was counting the days through during the week for it to come on. I think it was on Saturday or Sunday. It was on at the weekend. And I was dreaming about it on the days waiting for it to come on. You know, she was so beautiful. Linda, what was the woman's name? The actress.
I can't remember the name.
Well.
I can see her, but I can't remember the name.
Wow. Just beauty. Beauty. Just loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And then in modern years, you've become a big fan of The Sopranos, I believe.
Well, The Sopranos, I mean, it's the best ever. I've just rewatched it last month. I rewatched all the seasons. About, I think it might be the third time I watched it. Could even be the fourth. And you get more out of it. You know, a few years go by. That's the thing about something great, like a great book or a great play or a great TV show or a great film. You can let a few years go by and then go back to it and watch it again. And then you get more out of it, you know, just it keeps giving. And I love it. I mean, I grew up in an old fashioned world. I'm 52 years old in July. And I grew up in a world of families and, you know, when men were men and the girl's name was Nancy, as my father used to say. But it reminds me in some ways of the way that I was brought up and the kind of family dynamics that were around at the time in the 70s and 80s.
Slightly toned down from The Sopranos, I hope so.
There wasn't many murders or anything. There might have been the odd one, but not so many, no.
I've just looked up, it was Linda Carter who played Wonder Woman.
Linda Carter,
that's it,
beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful.
There's one final thing I need to do, and I want to play a little bit of a track because we ask everyone for a buried treasure, somebody or something that you believe people should know more about. And you've brought forward the musical artist JMSN. Why is this?
Oh, because he's just brilliant. He's done so many amazing tracks, amazing albums. He's got this energy when you look at his videos and stuff where he's just got this performative energy where it's like not like anyone else. He seems to understand all the kind of music that I love, like the kind of disco and the R&B and the rare groove kind of vibes, as well as understanding rock. Incredible voice, incredible songwriter. He's a little underrated, a little bit under the radar. And I just really want to take any opportunity to kind of big him up because he's amazing.
Let's hear a little bit of Inferno. Inferno by JMSN, the buried treasure choice from Roisin Murphy, who's taking part in Incognito 2025, the art sale, where the artists behind the artworks are kept top secret until after the event. You can get more details at incognito.ie, and each postcard-sized artwork, you don't know who it is you're buying, but you could get Roisin Murphy's artwork. It only costs €70 and it's in aid of the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation. It's a major fundraiser every year for that fantastic charity. Roisin Murphy, thank you for joining us from Arklow. It has been terrific having you in the Culture Club. You've been great company.
Thank you. So nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
The Last Word on Today FM.